You're listening to Dig Deep on Northern Community Radio. Aaron Brown is our liberal commentator from Minnesota Brown, and from Strong Towns, Chuck Marone, he's our conservative commentator. We're discussing political parties, where they came from, what they were like before, and what is happening with them now and into the future. So we, in our last segment, we kind of ended with our first Republican, official Republican president, Abraham Lincoln. Where do we go from here?
I think that you have this period of time between the Civil War and really the signing of the Civil Rights Act, where you had the two parties, the Republicans and Democrats, aligned in the same way. And it was only till the mid-60s when things flipped and started to change
dramatically. It started a little earlier. It started, but I think the big flip was 64.
Yeah, I think the big switch was then. Because what you had was you had, basically, geographically, you had the Party of the North, and you could think of them as the Northern industrialists and the Northern workers. We didn't have unions at that point, but it was, those groups. And then you had the Southerners and the plantation owners and the aristocracy and the whole Southern system. The Southerners were the Democrats, the Northerners were the Republicans. And we went through a period of Reconstruction, a period of industrialization. Essentially, with the North winning the war, you had broken the plantation system. You had changed the economics of the South and the North, and really given the North kind of primacy that still exists to this day, really economically. Maybe it started to ebb a little bit or change a little bit with the decline of the Rust Belt and things starting to move south. But I think still you'd be hard to argue that the South...
Mostly weather-related.
A lot of it's weather-related today, just because we're mobile.
People want to live in the warm climates, yeah.
But at the time, you had the South literally in ruins in many ways. I mean, Sherman's March was devastating. There was a lot of Reconstruction. And you had this period of time where all of a sudden the South, was back in the Union, got their voting abilities back, and then started voting in. You had the establishment, kind of reestablishment, reassertion of the aristocracy through the Jim Crow laws and other things to kind of cement these two different, very diametrically opposed parties that existed in principle before the Civil War, but existed in actuality after. It was just that after, the North was really powerful and could have its way, and the South was simply an opposition party in a sense.
The rise of the Democratic Party after Reconstruction, there's a whole school of thought, and at the time, the end of Reconstruction was viewed as a political move. The country was tired of being so divided, and so there was a hope, especially among the existing power structure, to go back to, hey, let's make some money now. Let's go back to being America and not have these fights about this. Not that the fights went away. There is a whole school of thought to say, though, that the North did win the war and actually failed to do what winning factions in a civil war normally do, which is assert total power. And so the South was essentially allowed to bring back, through Jim Crow and other laws, a lot of the vestiges of the system that they had defended in the Civil War, even though they lost the war. And the Democratic Party becomes the mechanism, because of the number of states and the electoral power of the South. Keep in mind that, a lot of people who couldn't vote were still counted in the census. The power of the South is that they had many electoral votes that did not affiliate with actual voters.
If this would have been a different country in a different time and the North would have defeated the South, they would have rewritten the Constitution to take away Southern voting power in Congress.
And their land.
That's what countries normally do. We didn't do that. So all of a sudden, you have all these slaves that are now getting counted for the census. You have all these people who are now basically forced to vote Democratic in the South, and you stuff the Congress full of Democrats.
Right. And so that was the case before the Civil War. And after a time, it becomes the case again where the Democratic Party is still asserting strength. However, the Western expansion of America really explains a lot about the rise of the Republican Party. Because as I said, Lincoln was a Westerner, we'd call him an Easterner, but he'd be a Westerner by the standards of his time.
Illinois was out west.
The Northwest. Chicago was the great Northwestern city of the time.
And Minnesota was founded in 1858. So, I mean, you're talking about where Minnesota was on the edge of
We were the wilderness of the Northwest.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So keep in mind that we're not thinking about the Northwest as Seattle at this point. That's the far, far frontier. But the rise of these Western towns and their desire to form communities, and indeed they were not slave communities, they were free labor communities. And so the rise and the expansion westward and all of the resources and land and the need for railroads, these become big issues in the rise of the Republican Party in the late 1800s, especially leading into the beginning of the 1900s with who's the great American imperialist but Teddy Roosevelt.
When you look at like Minnesota history in this era, what you have is you have the railroads being granted land, given land, by Republican administrations, Republican policies in a sense, so that the railroads could come in and develop towns. And there was a whole class of people that were getting rich from this. The land speculators, the railroads themselves, and then the pioneers and the settlers that came here. You could get really cheap land in places that were growing. And, you know, with besides a hiccup in the 1870s when we overbuilt and had housing correction, like a bubble burst.
Yeah, recession.
You essentially had decades of enormous growth and opportunity all throughout what was then the West. And that was fueled by Republican policies, and the people there found themselves very eager to vote Republican.
So Minnesota, and this is where we can finally get it home, I think. Minnesota is founded as a Republican state. It wouldn't exist in many ways. The railroads wouldn't have been built if it weren't for the Republican Party. There are some Democrats among the early governors, but for the most part, the people coming in and running the state, the territory and the state are Republicans. The state legislature, the Senate, people who are elected by the legislature at that time, the members of Congress are overwhelmingly Republican. In the Lincoln model of the Republican Party, the westward expanding abolitionist aspects of the Republican Party.
Proactive government. Government kind of aligned with business to make things happen.
To make things happen with somebody smart at the helm is kind of the thing with the Republican Party. They're not the party of the mob. They're the party of the civilization, really, is how they kind of would have seen themselves. And who's coming into Minnesota at this time in history but Scandinavian immigrants and German immigrants and a lot of immigrants? But the Scandinavians come in literate and they come in fairly well educated and they come in with very big views on equality. They're disappointed to learn that women can't vote in the new country because they were starting to get the right to vote back in Scandinavia. So the party of equality at that time would have been the Republican Party. So in Minnesota, these Scandinavian immigrants are overwhelmingly Republican, and they're also prohibitionist. They're also against liquor, and that was also a Republican, a haven for a Republican coalition is the prohibitionists and folks like that. And if you were to have people advocating for the right of women to vote, they would have been Republicans too. And that's the alignment of that time. So Minnesota is formed as a Republican state. It has pockets of Democratic support in central Minnesota where the German and Irish American immigrants tended to affiliate with the Democratic Party on the grounds that they were the party of the common man. And then towns like St. Paul or the big cities would have strong Democratic parties, again, because of that immigrant influence in the voting patterns. But the Democrats are a woeful minority through most of the early part of Minnesota history. They're just not able to put it together. The Republicans are the real dominant party of Minnesota, really leading up through the progressive era of the early 1900s, where there's a reform movement that, again, starts mostly in the Republican Party. It actually, again, begins. This is where you can start to see some changes. The early 1900s, and this is the era that I'm researching right now, you see the Republican Party start to split over the progressive wing of its party, the side of the party that wants to reform industry, support workers, provide for the poor, these kinds of positions versus the, now I guess we'd call it the aristocratic old base of the party, the high order business people and high finance people, more conservative people, maybe more skeptical of immigrants and things like that would have, now we're starting to see the Republican Party have another fission, a divide of some sort. And this is happening in Minnesota. It's happening, you know, Victor Power, the guy I'm researching from Hibbing, is a Republican who is very much a progressive Republican and flirts with battles. He actually runs for the U.S. Senate and loses badly in the Republican primary because he's the progressive and he loses to the more conservative and Scandinavian opponent. But this is happening right at this time. Teddy Roosevelt splits from the party in 1912, and basically that turns the election over to Woodrow Wilson, who is probably one of the most racist conservative Democrats to ever get passed off as a reformer.
Right. Woodrow Wilson's a fascinating guy.
He is. He's been dead a while, and you wouldn't normally say that to a guy's face. But keep in mind, at this time, the Democratic Party has got this whole Southern base, and Woodrow Wilson kind of perfectly captures the race-oriented, the really the white supremacist wing of the Democratic Party, and then manages to loop in some intellectuals. He's a college president from New Jersey, so he loops in intellectuals and overcomes Taft, the old businessman, and Roosevelt, the Republican progressive, and wins big in 1912. And so that's really where you start to see the Republican Party have some problems. The progressives are losing the battle, and so they have choices. They can either suck it up and stick with the Republican Party, or they can start to gravitate, as many do, towards the Democratic Party. But in Minnesota, that's not what happens. In Minnesota, because of the large number of immigrants, it's a newer state. It's not new at this point, but it's only been around, 60 years. Living people remember the territory days. The labor movement is taking off because of the progressive movement. So the Farmer Labor Party, which is an outcropping of the old Nonpartisan League, forms. And so the Minnesota's Farmer Labor Party, still to this day, the most successful third party in American history, unless you count the Republican Party. They actually start electing Minnesota leaders. They take the legislature. They take the governor's office. They elect senators and a majority of the congressional delegation. The Farmer Labor Party really becomes very successful because the old Scandinavian equality voters are now moving towards farmer labor, and the Republicans, it's not that the Republicans go away, they remain a strong power in Minnesota. They obviously still are a major party, but the Farmer Labor Party, and it's later, as it peters out and merges with the Democrats, really makes Minnesota more like the state we knew up until a point.
I think it's important too to just note here, just pause and note that at this point, politics is local. You have this Farmer Labor Party come up because we have a unique set of things. The Democratic Party can unite at the national level on certain policies, but for the most part, we have very little in common. What would become the DFL party here has very little in common at this point with what the Democrats in, say, Alabama or Mississippi would be. Mm-hmm. Completely different.
That's our conservative commentator, Chuck Marone. He and liberal commentator Aaron Brown are taking up the topic of the history of political parties, specifically in the state of Minnesota. Aaron Brown continues.
These older parties, it's hard to put an ideological label on them.
Right.
Because you could have a liberal Republican and you could have a truly conservative Democrat. These were factions of interests that formed to create a viable party to elect candidates and govern a country. It ends up, because of the unique American system, that gets into part of why we really only have two parties at the national level, because a lot of people who would have been their own party, Southern Democrats, for instance, or Northeastern Republicans, would have been a certain kind of party. And then those expanding out west would have probably formed a different, perhaps more middle of the road kind of party. Instead of seeing that, you see people have to choose between joining the factions of the Democrats, common people, but also Southern aristocrats and racists, and then the Republicans, who have the super rich business elite, but also shopkeepers and Western expansionist minded people as
some
well.
Some women suffragists. You have this winner take all system. So by the time you get to the federal level, you wind up having to choose. But at the local level, you have a ton of nuance. You can go find a Republican from Minnesota and then look at a Democrat from the South. And as Nixon and Reagan would discover in later years, they actually had a lot in common, but in their own local context didn't.
Mm-hmm. Right. So this is leading up to, we get to World War II, where really the culmination of this now, this notion that the Republicans are the freedom equality side and the Democrats are the populist side, and if the populists want some fairly racist policies, that's okay because that's what the people want. Up to World War II, and actually before that, the Depression, I think 1932 and the election of Franklin Roosevelt reshapes the Democratic Party for a time and solidifies a more liberal tradition. Roosevelt helps bring the progressives and give them a home in the Democratic Party. He also opens the, because for up until the 30s and 40s, and then more later, African Americans who can vote and who can get through Jim Crow laws in the South or who do vote in the North are still voting for Republicans because Republicans are historically the party that ended slavery, but also that's where their interests are, is with the Republican Party. With Roosevelt, you see African Americans, you see liberals really gravitate out of the Republican Party into the Democratic Party, which is not an easy thing because there's plenty of conservative Southern Democrats in the Democratic Party. You can watch movies now. Now we're getting into the era of movies, and you can watch these political movies from the 30s, 40s, and 50s. I enjoy those movies because you can really see they always have a Southern Democrat character.
Like Colonel Sanders.
Yeah, always like a caricature of a Southern Democrat. And he's always a big stick in the mud for what the noble, probably Democratic candidate or person at the lead of the movie is trying to do. There's a movie with Henry Fonda that's like that, where Henry Fonda is trying to get confirmed as the Democratic Secretary of State, and there's an old Beauregard, you know, whatever.
This was like the Tammany Hall time, you know, the whole like Teapot Dome scandal was in the early 1900s, where it's like this big patronage system. And you had, you know, from the Northeast, you had this amongst the Republicans. You also had it, the smoke-filled room thing with the Democrats. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you get the sense of like, it's a derivation of the plantation mentality. Like these were the people in charge. These were the people you would go talk to, and they exerted power.
So getting back to Minnesota, the idea here is that the Democratic Party, DFL Party, is the unique label for our Democratic Party because of that farmer labor tradition where the liberals formed their own party, the progressives formed their own party rather than join the Democrats at first. Well, now with the death of Floyd B. Olson and other things that changed the farmer labor party, Hubert Humphrey is a very important figure in this story for a couple reasons. One is he negotiates the merger of the Democratic and the Farmer Labor Party in Minnesota, which is significant for us in Minnesota in our political history. But Hubert Humphrey is also the one in 1948 who delivers the plank speech supporting civil rights in the Democratic plank, and it passes, and it causes Strom Thurmond and the Dixiecrats and the Southern Democrats to storm out of the convention hall in 1948. Now, we can say 64 is the year where this realignment, this period ends and a new period begins, but that I say it starts earlier because in 1948, Humphrey and McCarthy and the Minnesota Democrats are really significant in bringing civil rights to the forefront of the Democratic platform. The party that had been for slavery 100 years earlier is now gravitating towards the anti-slavery position. And as we see in the civil rights, and when, as famously, Lyndon Johnson in 1965 that he signed that, or 64?
I think it was 64, but
he is reelected in 64, but that year he signs the civil rights legislation, you know, the Civil Rights Act, which among other things protects voting and things like that for African Americans in the South in particular, adding a lot of stringent rules for the South in terms of passing voter suppression laws. And Lyndon Johnson, in signing it, famously says, "We've lost the South for a generation." Now, he was certainly right that they did lose the South starting very shortly after that. You can now see that it's lasted a little longer than a generation.
Right.
So conservatives in the Democratic Party begin a process of gravitating towards the Republican Party.
I think there's one other kind of parallel thing going on here to bring us up to like the modern, what would be the modern alignment. And that has to deal with foreign policy, because you had the Republicans were very much isolationists, or at least a large contingent of them.
Do as little as possible on the foreign scene.
Today we would brand them isolationists. They were, I think, originalists. I mean, following George Washington's advice to avoid foreign entanglements. And when you get to World War I, Republicans generally, you can maybe take some of the people who would have been building the bombs and making money from that, but the rank and file Republicans were generally against intervening in World War I. They were reluctant to intervene in World War II. Obviously, when we were attacked, things realigned quickly and that changed. But the Democratic Party at that point at the national level was kind of the interventionist party.
Woodrow Wilson being kind of among...
Well, Woodrow Wilson was described by Churchill as thinking he was Jesus, you know, could go out and like bring peace to the world and realign things in his image of what he thought it should be. He came up with the League of Nations was his idea. You know, this very idealistic notion that we could all just talk and get along. wonderful idea from a very idealistic person at a very idealistic time. These parties, in a sense, when we take a snapshot today and compare them to what they were in this early 1900s to mid 1900s, we basically have had a almost complete inverse.
Yeah.
If you would take a person today and drop them back then, if they were a Republican today, they would likely have been a Democrat back then. If you take the Democrat, they would likely have been Republican back then. And that's it's a very odd thing. And I think the way that realignment happened is fascinating and has huge impacts on us today.
All right, we'll take that up in our next segment of Dig Deep on political parties.